Good morning, everyone. I'm sure you've all heard, we have to leave lest we are evicted no later than 10:45. But I'm sure that makes all of you very pleased. Yes. So I know that you're all going to be happy with that. 9:30, 9:45. And then in terms of, Honourable Van Schalkwyk, I know you leave at 9:30.
Yes, about 20 past.
Right, okay, because if your meeting starts at 10:30, yes. And I am aware of all of this. That's why I said we're not too concerned. Only the stalwarts would be here at the ramparts. All right? So just relax. On that note, then, we'll get the apologies. And we've got, well, we've already noted, you see, officially, it's the Honourables Korenhof, Science and Technology, Van Schalkwyk, Labour, Khadebe, that would be our half-time whip, as it were, International Relations, and the Honourable Hill Lewis today is on party business, but I'm sure you're aware of that, Honourable MacPherson.
Yeah.
Right. The Honourable Esterhazen is attending to party business. I'm not sure when I'll do my party business, but it will be sometime. Right. Then on this side, we only have apologies. Mr. Hermans is in and out.
Yes.
Right. And with us in attendance, yes, do go ahead. Yes. Now, if I recall, are you one of our new members of Parliament? You know, because it takes people like me, who are on a remedial program, a bit of time to learn names, as everyone knows. And so, if you would kindly forward your name in writing to me, yes, so that I get more familiar with the names. I know the faces, but not the names, all right? I'm Flaglet ABC, all right. All right, I've got them here. The names are Buyani and Teko. Thank you. Now, I've just received this, as you see. On that note, with welcoming, we'll welcome the DG more formally of Trade and Industry, Mr. Lionel October, Mr. Steve... the DDG, Mabichi Thompson, Malebo, is it, Incentive Development and Administration, and Mr. Stephen Harnival, Chief Economist. You've got a fantastic sense of humour, Stephen, which, and I can see the name Harnival rhymes with carnival. So, one of those things, hey. It is good to have a sense of humour as an economist. Very good. Right.
Essential.
Yeah. So now we're going to hand over to you, Mr. Wilcox. We were hoping to have had you the other day when we had the incentives, but we did get Treasury's apology. And you're here on your own, so I take it that you're not afraid of Trade and Industry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Good morning to everybody. My name is Owen Wilcox. I'm Chief Director in the Public Finance Division of National Treasury. Our job is to monitor budget, spending, policies, implementation of line departments of government. We assist the departments when they need to make presentations or when they need to request for funding or any sort of work that they need in terms of the PFMA. And I've got one of my line departments that I assist is Trade and Industry. So I'm going to be speaking about the Manufacturing Competitiveness and Enhancement Program, just give you a bit of background about it, and the view from the Treasury side, mostly about the financing of the program. So I'll just go through the allocation and expenditure, and from our side, some of the challenges that we've seen, and just the quick overview of the engagements we've had with DTI regarding the program. Speak at the end. Is this presentation actually working? I'm on the second page.
We've got the hard copy. Don't worry.
Okay, we're good. Okay.
If we get more money in Parliament, we'll be able to fix it.
Parliament sponsors their own budget. That's just Yes, and then I'll start. Just briefly go on at the end to talk about the way forward on this program and on incentives as a whole. So, hopefully, the committee is aware of MSIP. It's part of the economic competitiveness support package. That was a much bigger package that was brought about because of the global financial crisis and the South African response to the global financial crisis, trying to improve competitiveness of South African companies and improve the regulatory capacity of the state as well. We voted originally just 25 billion rand over 6 years. ECSP, the MSEP was one of the largest components of that. The other biggest component was the SEZ program. So MSEP's got two major components. There's the production incentive program, which is cost sharing grants to buy new equipment and upgrade processes and also enable green technologies and feasibility studies. This part is managed by the Department of Trade and Industry. This is mostly what we're speaking about today. The industrial financing loan facility is a loan facility for working capital. That money is with the Industrial Development Corporation. They manage that. Onto the allocations table. I think this is where the committee is interested in what we have to contribute. It illustrates how much funding has been allocated to the program. The top line is the original allocation, so that is the amount that's put in the budget in February. The adjusted estimate movements is what happens when money is moved around in the MPBPS in October. And then the third line, the environment, that is shifting of funds that the department carries out in other times of the year. So, if money is moved within the main division of the vote, then the Director General has the capability to move the money into different uses of the funding. What we've seen is that we've started off with about more than a billion rand a year. The last 2 years we've had 2 billion rand a year going towards MSEP. There's also been at times substantial funding shifted in and out of the program. Expenditure has been pretty good. If you look down at the seventh line, it gives us the percentage of expenditure of the adjusted budget. And there was only underspending on 1 year really. That was primarily because the program was still getting started. I think once the systems were up and running, there hasn't really been an issue in terms of spending on the budget. In fact, in recent years, the main issue has been that we haven't been able to, the demand for the incentive has been much greater than the available budget. So we just wanted to indicate there that there is substantial funding, but at the same time, there is substantial demand for this program. There's also been some money moved in and out that is within the responsibility of the department to carry out. So looking forward in 2017, MSEP is allocated 1.7 billion.
Hello. That mic seems to be giving you trouble. Oh, don't tell me it's that room. No. That chair is meant for the MP. We have greater respect for those in Treasury, I believe.
Okay.
Those are honourable ones.
There's nothing honourable about members of Parliament.
Speak for yourself.
So in 2017-18, MSIP's allocated 1.49 billion, and there's been an additional allocation of 1.35 billion in 2018-19. So the broader package that I was speaking about, that expires in 2017-18, and we've done a one-year extension of the ECSP package, and that included 1.35 billion for MSIP in 2018-19. Just the challenges are in terms of MSIP. it has been, I suppose the challenges, a lot of this is what, you know, when I say challenges, these are actually mostly from the department side, not from the treasury side, but managing the timeline of this person has been difficult. The department gets an application and then they have to assess that application, but they've only got a 1 year funding window, and then that funding often runs out within the year, and then they end up because the demand for the program is so high, then they end up assessing applications when they can only make a payment in the next year, or sometimes even in 2 years' time. So that has been an issue, and then there's also been an issue of non-compliance on the part of the firms who are applying, that they don't furnish all the particulars that are needed. Or sometimes they don't actually comply with the requirements. There has been funding shifted away, and I think that's partly due to the fact that the department's budget is under pressure, and the department has felt that other incentive programs were more of a priority. So the money was shifted towards the automotive incentive scheme and enterprise investment program. But in other years, in some years the department shifted money away, and other years money was shifted back into the incentive scheme. I think the third bullet there on the start of the challenges is plugged in. That all explains.
Give Treasury an incentive to, you know, just get someone to assist.
Sorry, I shouldn't think that.
No, Mr. Wilcox, we should have been more concerned.
I think the third bullet relates to what I was saying earlier about the funding, that the environments have been pushed towards other incentive programs that have increased the pressure on the incentive program. So that has pushed back the problem of not having sufficient funding to help the applicants in the particular year when they apply. So currently liabilities on the program are about $2.5 billion, but that is obviously, that amount is capped by what is the available allocation. So DTI is not allowed to, and they haven't exceeded the approvals have not exceeded the remaining allocation. We've spoken to DTI about this many times, and Treasury is also involved in the adjudication of applications. And we have just our engagements are just about improving communication and providing beneficiaries with non-financial support. So there have been some issues about turnaround times for inspections.
Explain what you mean, turnaround. It's not the same as the aircraft. What do you mean?
So we have to, this is really, I think it's what the department does, the DTI does. They have to inspect facilities. You can't just pay out.
I'll get the DG to respond to that.
Do you want to respond later?
Later.
Rather let the expert answer that question. Thank you, Chair. And just in terms of going forward, what the program is going forward. So as I said, the ECFP was a 6-year program as a response to the financial crisis. That program ends in 2017-18, but there is a feeling and a perception that the program is absolutely necessary for the South African economy and for South African firms, companies. And so what we've done is DPMEU is doing a review of all business incentives across government. So it covers most of the DTI incentives, it covers the jobs fund at Treasury, it covers science and technology incentives for research and innovation, and tax incentives, public procurement. I don't know if I've missed anything out there. I think there's it covers also training through labour, is that right? I think so. So it really is it was trying to take a very broad view of the system of government, of business incentives. And once that review is done, we're going to use that review to try and to inform the budget process. So So for now, we've got a one-year extension. The problem is this review will only be done in December, so I'm not sure what we're going to do in next year's budget cycle. From the Treasury side, the budget cycle starts in July.
July.
So we're going to have to make a decision about how we move forward on that. But the long-term view is going to be informed by this, by the TPME review. And that hopefully will, we'll have some sort of outcome in the calendar year on that. All right. Okay, and that's all I have to say.
Well, that was very succinct. Thank you. If you just switch your mic off. Mine doesn't have the same tendency, but it's useful to have it all. Just before we engage members, I think the DG should just clarify that. And then we'll get a clarification from Treasury on something, and then we'll have the engagement. So, DG, just on that specific point to start.
Yes. The question of inspections and management of the scheme prudently. As you know, we have our fiduciary duty as the accounting officer and officials of the department. We must ensure that the taxpayers' money gets meant for the purpose it was intended. That means it must go to a manufacturer who is producing value for the economy. The way we ensure that is by having a system of we don't pay in one tranche. We usually pay in two or three tranches. So, and what we do then is, obviously we can't inspect all the firms, but we try to cover at least most of them. We also bring in an additional capacity, but once we get the application, we also inspect the premises to go and see that the machinery is installed or the competitiveness is enhanced, so that we can ensure that every cent that goes out of this fund goes into productive capacity, there's people employed on those machines, so even we want to see those machines working. We don't even want to see them just you bought them and then you take them out as the Taiwanese used to do, bring them into Botswana, then the next day they take them back to Lesotho. We must see the machines operating. So that is the role of our inspector. They monitor that the incentives has gone to the right person for the right purpose, and that is the inspection program. Now the issue of the management of the scheme, and that's why we have to bring Malebo from, she was in industrial policy. But we needed an industrial policy person to manage the scheme. It's not an administrative process. So somebody applies in year one. You have to give an approval and you may have to pay that person 20 million rand. But that investment that they make takes place over 3 years.
The 20 million?
The million they're putting in.
Oh, the
machinery. They may be making an investment of 50 million rand.
I see.
They do it over 3 years, but you must give the approval in year one, maybe. So you only pay them in year two, because as I said, we don't want to give them the money up front. So they only get the money in year two, so that's what's called management of your budget and your liabilities. Because remember, when you approve people in year one, you must know you're going to pay them out only in year three. So you must, in a sense, place that on your books to say, I've got a contingent liability in year three. So the way you hear the budget, because you get budget every year.
Yeah.
But so once you get the money actually for that year, you've already disbursed that money as it were. So that's why that's just called management, and that is why it's in part. Then the third thing is the DTI, we have to manage, as you said, we get 5.7 billion, roughly 5.7 billion for all our incentives. Now investments are what they call bulky. So, for example, you can't say Mercedes-Benz works on a 7-year cycle when they decide to allocate to their plants globally. They allocate who's going to build the E-class, who's going to build the C-class, and so on. So you get your companies bidding, so it's London plant on which the whole is London depends, is Mercedes-Benz. They have to bid to Germany to say we can do the C-class and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Then Germany comes and says, what is our incentive we're going to give them and will we give them an incentive? So we must allocate, but we can't say to Germany, no, wait, we're waiting for our budgetary process to be completed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be dynamic, you have to, you, when you get an opportunity for an investment. So that's why what they call environments, We sometimes have to move money because this year is a big auto investment coming in. Then we have to do that. That's why. That, and but it's an insignificant amount we moved around. 100 million is 1% of that budget. But so we take it in this year, we would give it to Mercedes-Benz to make the investment. The next year we move it back because then again there's those liabilities. So there is this movement within the incentive depending on the demand from investors. And that is, as I said, it is a complex process. It means you must read the market demand, you must plan it, and that's why I said. But I think what we've done is we've been able to manage this thing very effectively because not in 1 year did DPI overspend or over commit in terms of our budget. Unlike Geist, when we had that, as you know, we caused a massive problem. The Geist program had to be stopped, which we inherited because of overcommitments and so on. So as you know, we've been within 1%, 2% of our budget. So we've managed that 5.7 billion between, but what we've done is we've managed to, as I said, the purpose of this program was to save the manufacturing industry from the financial crisis. We've done that, but we've also managed to, as you will see in the, I'm doing the report to the Select Committee, we've managed to actually draw in massive investments into autos, into agro-processing through the scheme, and so on. So just the management of the fund and the inspection.
No, thank you very much, DG. And just, as I said, before we engage then, Mr. Wilcox, you will recall that over, I think, 5 years at least, when did this program start? It's been about 4 or 5 years. I remember when the 12i came in, for example, that many years ago. But again, more recently, 5 years, 3 years, and so on, successive ministers of finance and treasury per se, and indeed, it must have then been endorsed by cabinet, because the President also confirmed this. They made statements to the effect that incentives are the sharpest instruments to get results. Well, you know, we were quite heartened when we heard that kind of statement. And they would list everything that had happened. But it seems that the emphasis on the statement reduced the amount of money. Because there's a direct correlation between the emphasis of this, how sharp the instrument was, to the actual reduction in funds. So I'm wondering if we didn't misunderstand what was meant. I mean, how does Treasury see, how does it understand what incentives can produce? Why would it even agree to incentives? What does it anticipate would be the result? Yes. Press, you can press your button, Mr. Wilcox.
Sorry, I wasn't sure if I should wait for other questions.
No, I said after your clarification.
I'm not sure about the, in terms of the reduction in incentives,
the amount of money.
The amount, a reduction in the allocation, I think, because the ECSP was quite a substantial increase in the amount of money that's available for incentives. But I think it is clear that it is government's policy to stimulate the manufacturing sector and stimulate manufactured exports. And, I mean, incentives clearly play a role in motivating firms to invest more and to, the department has used incentives to change the motivation of the firm to invest more, and also in terms of where they relocate themselves, in terms of special economic zones. So I think it's clear that is something that works in terms of that. I think the incentive review that we've commissioned is going to play an important role in determining where exactly we can go with the program. But there's no question that incentives are important. The feedback we get from the private sector is that obviously these things are important. If you go to the manufacturing in Darba, there are a line of people who want to talk about EPSET because it's something that it's a program we've actually just we haven't had enough allocation to meet the demand for it. So I think I would say incentives are incredibly important. Unfortunately with all allocations we are stuck that we the amount that we would like to give is far short of what we actually are able to give, and it's a symptom of the current fiscal situation that we can't give more.
Right, let me leave you there and ask members of the committee now to comment, ask questions or clarifications. Raise your hand. I saw the Honourable MacPherson first, and seemed to be directly Honourable Williams, Honourable Mantush, Honourable Van Skulpe. Right, in that order. Let's look at a maximum of 3 minutes as a start.
Thank you.
I saw others down there as well.
I think we can all agree on the importance of incentives. I mean, I don't hear anyone objecting to what they achieve. But I think that people maybe, and it's something that I've been asking for some time, is the cost benefit per rand on incentives. So for every 1 rand that we distribute, what goes back into their fiscus, whether it's through, you know, corporation tax, PAYE, VAT, etc., etc. And I think that would actually, you know, help members and the public at large understand how important, for every 1 cent that government, you know, distributes, actually what comes back into the economy and how many jobs are created. And I think that when we have that, and one day hopefully someone will give it to me, we will see incentives through a different light. But I agree why MSTEP was first started. It was first started to mitigate against the financial crisis, and I think, you know, it's achieved its objectives in that sense. And so it's really critical we then have a discussion about what do we want incentives to do in the next 5, 10 and 15 years. And we know that globally, that in order for us to compete, we need to offer incentives because, you know, that is what the developed countries are doing. And so what concerns me is that we're at this juncture where MSTEP comes to an end and there's no 5, 10 or 15 year plan on the table. There's a 1 year plan. Now those in business that are planning, you know, to modernize their factory floor, they have no certainty. They don't know where they go. And if you're only getting that money in year 2 or 3 after you've bought the machine, why would anyone go and buy or modernize their factory today? Why would they take that decision today if they don't know that, you know, opportunity is going to be available in 5 or 10 years? And what concerns me more than this, DG, is that this is something that I've been asking the Minister since 2015. You've been in the room when I've asked this question. And the answer continuously that I get is we're engaging with National Treasury. Now, I don't know if the Department of National Treasury has met once, twice, or 3 times in those 2 years. But why is no plan on the table for the long term, of incentives? We've discussed, about tailoring incentives, creating new incentives for SMMEs, for, other types of projects, tax incentives. We know I-12 has worked well, but, is there something new there? And so I'm really disappointed, and I don't know whose fault it is, but I was hoping for more, Chair. I was hoping that I was going to have that cost-benefit analysis.
Well,
I've asked for it a number of times. I asked for it in the last meeting. And I'm disappointed that we still don't have that plan. So I'm hoping that we're going to come back with something more, after this. I'm hoping that we're going to have stakeholders here, those that have actually benefited, those that actually want to put something on the table, because I think that there's a lot of great ideas in the marketplace. And I think that there's a great opportunity to also, to partner with the private sector, in putting packages together that are actually sector specific, like the automotive, program. Because I mean, that's been a success. No one's going to doubt that. So, yeah, I'm a bit disappointed in what's here today, but hopefully I might get some answers on the question. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, I just want to ask the Treasury, in the long-term review that you were talking about, do you have anything in that review where you look at transformation? For instance, 5.7 billion rands is the total budget for incentives, and I'd like to know, in your long-term review, is it just about job creation? There's nothing about, for instance, employment equity. Yesterday there was an employment equity report presented, and it was shocking how much there's been no transformation. And I'd like to know whether or not Treasury has considered the implications of using these incentives to try and incentivize the private sector to comply to legislation, which isn't happening. So I'd like to know from Treasury, in your long-term review, is it just about the technical stuff about, you bought the machinery, meanwhile the company hasn't complied to the legislation that we have, and is there a relationship between non-compliance and receiving funds, and if not, why not? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Williams, Honourable Mantosh. A little bit louder, dear. Maybe if the mic's not up. Right.
I'm saying, Chairperson, on slide 5, report bullet, can it be explained to me?
Yeah.
What does it mean? What
does it mean
that the two line needs to improve the year being taken service?
All right.
And again, to the department, I would be happy if the companies that have benefited from this program, can they indicate to the committee the level of jobs that have been saved to the program, so that you can see that the money that you spent has gone well. And also I'm passionate about what Honourable Williams is saying, that of us monitoring the implementation of the legislation that we want.
Thank you, Honourable Mantosh. Honourable Van Schalkwyk, and to everyone sitting on my right, please answer this question first when it comes up, Van Schalkwyk coming up, because she's leaving at 9:20.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm almost covered, but we often find that companies are being relieved and there's a lot of money being pumped in. But when you look at the working conditions of the staff members in those companies, there's no proper monitoring taking place. It's just a matter of everything is fine on the financial side. So I want to know, in terms of the monitoring, or especially when looking at the site visits, if you are looking into the working conditions of the employees also in those companies. But also I want to know that often when you are referring to the inspector that you are relying on, do you have sufficient human capacity to enforce a proper inspectorate function in this company? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We are going to have another round of questions, but do go ahead and respond. So the Honourable Van Schalkwyk's questions first.
Maybe the department should can they respond to that one?
Abichi Thompson.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to the Honourable Members. Chair, on the inspectorate, working conditions, because it's a condition for incentives, it's something that we also must check. And that will include also contribution to the UIF to make sure that the employees that are employed are also insured with the unemployment insurance fund. That also goes to the issue of the salaries, that the company that we support must adhere to the sectoral determination in terms of wages for the applicable sector. So the inspectorate does check that, and they confirm that. In terms of a human resource, we would always want more, but we do have a sufficient enough capability, and we also employ where it makes sense consulting engineers to help us with the technical inspections where we don't have capacity internally. But we are sufficiently happy, but because DG is here, we do need more inspectors. Thanks.
Right. Is there any other comment coming from trade and industry before? Yes?
Oh, I think maybe we'll talk.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you. In terms of cost-benefit ratio, I think that's something we can maybe other department can speak about. I understand the frustration about the long-term view of or long-term plan, for instance, but that hasn't happened as much as we'd like. We are constrained by the budgeting process and also by the fact that there was a budget 4 million years ago to go to a 3-year budget rather than just an annual budget. So we've got a 3-year view, but I understand that in some cases maybe that is not long-term enough, that firms actually need a longer view. So, the 1-year extension was a temporary measure, it was a stopgap. The idea is that we move towards a longer run view, and ideally we'd get another 6-year package that we could rely on, a budget over 6 years. In terms of the communication between DTI and Treasury, we communicate frequently. Speak to DTI colleagues at least weekly. Probably too much communication sometimes. From our not in the minutes. There's constant communication about processes and how we can improve them. We'll have to see what that brings about in the budget process. In terms of the transformation objectives, BEE certificate is one of the requirements to receive any funding from DTI, but I think maybe the department can speak about that better than
sure.
I can. And in terms of the liabilities, the 2.48, those are applications that have been accepted but have not been paid out yet. So there's
a commitment.
An approval, but there's a commitment to pay, but no disbursement.
Right. Is there any thanks, DG?
Yes, just maybe to respond to a few of the issues, just on the impact analysis and the jobs and Honourable Mantash and Trafik, there's a number of reviews taking place, and one of them is financial treasury as well, and that is the review which I think will also inform a lot of what Mr. Honourable McPherson is asking for. They're doing a review of all the incentives. And one of the big issues is going to be what is the impact. But already the World Bank released a report last year, and they've already said that because of our incentive scheme, we've stabilized the manufacturing sector, and for every one job in manufacturing, we create 4 jobs in the rest of the economy, upstream and downstream. Because remember, if you build a car, you get the steel from ArcelorMittal. You get the glass from, you create, the auto industry as an example, there's 30,000 people just employed in assembly, 35,000, like directly in Mercedes-Benz, BMW. Then there are 70,000 people employed in the people who do the components for the auto industry. And then there's another 100,000, which is in aftercare, sales, dealerships, and so on, the services part of the auto industry. So the auto industry as a whole is 200,000 people, even though where we give our incentive to is to that assembly.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason is that it is what is called, it's a producer-driven value chain. It's driven by the Mercedes-Benzes, the Toyotas, and so on. They determine what's happening in the rest of the value chain. So It's one out of four. The manufacturing sector currently employs 1.7 million people. So if it creates another four jobs, there's 5 million people just sustained by manufacturing. And that's according to the World Bank. So that is why I think Honorable Max Pearson pointed the really important. Manufacturing matters. And as I said, and hopefully the results will show that it has a massive impact if you give it to manufacturing. And also besides that, the tax returns, paying into the fiscus, and so on. But the question is, we can't tie our incentive so directly to jobs because the amount of people we employ depends on the cycle. So for example, as you can see in April, nobody was buying cars because of the long holidays and the political climate and so on. So there was a drop in sales. Now once a company drops in sales, they have to cut their workforce. They cut their available, they go on short time or they lay off people or whatever because of the cycle. But they've already invested in the machinery. So we give them the incentive because they invest in the machinery. So they've got the capacity to employ much more people, but it depends on demand. So therefore you can't say, if I give you this money, you must employ so many people.
Sure.
What we try to ensure through our inspectors, what you must do, you must invest in plant and equipment and in competitiveness raising. So that when the cycle comes, you have the capability to produce for the market and you don't have to import it.
Sure.
And so that's why it's very important that we do, because as you know, you can't use capital without labor. So by having the capital in the country, by having those machines here and the factories here, we are ensuring that people are employed. But as I said, it's cyclical depending on the cycle. And then finally, Honorable McPherson, I think personally, McPherson, I think we really welcome the support you've given, because I think, as you know, we have struggled, I mean, until 2009.
Yeah.
Under the GEAR paradigm, DTI's budget for incentives declined. They took away all of our incentives. They closed it down. We didn't get any money from National Treasury. It was the philosophy of government and the world, the Washington consensus, that government must get out of the economy. And industrial policy is now revived by President Trump, but all the advice that the IMF and the World Bank and our own National Treasury gave us was incentives don't work, industrial policy don't work. So I think, I think what we could say is that we don't, as I said, we got this new incentive.
Yeah.
And I think Mr. Wolkoff is absolutely right, there's been a massive increase in the DTI's budget over the past 5 years. It's almost doubled. Because we've introduced the clothing and textile scheme, we've introduced the MSEP and so on. I think in future...
Could you just attend to the mic? I'm sorry. Right.
What we would like to see in future, and I think if I hear Mr. Wolkoff says that I think we do need also a generic... as I said, we need sectoral focus because that has the maximum impact and you can get returns. But you do need a generic incentive.
Sure.
So I think we want to say that you need that. And as I said, ideally it should be both a grant and maybe
sure.
a tax element. Mm-hmm. So we say for the 12i tax incentive, that should be broadened so that, as I said, it's not such a burden on the fiscus.
Sure.
It's just foregone revenue. But I think the point is correct. If we're going to push, because we've only stabilized the manufacturing sector. We've stopped it from bleeding,
right.
but we haven't grown.
Uh-huh.
And if we can get a generic incentive, and as I said, but as I said, we really want to push for this thing in agro-processing,
yeah.
because there the multipliers is even 11 to 1. So if you heard from poultry, if you revive the poultry industry, they have to buy, they have to, as I said, the chicken farms.
Sure.
The effects is massive. You know, for every one job in agro-processing, 11 jobs in agriculture.
Mm.
So we say we want a sectoral-specific scheme because it will be job-rich, but then also I think we support Dr. McPherson that we need some
sure.
form of generic incentive as well.
Just before we move beyond this point, I know some folks are standing up. I should have said this earlier, but you know, I was only informed late yesterday and again this morning about certain changes in the committee deployment. And I have been informed this morning about the two new members joining us who joined us yesterday, you may recall. But I've also been informed of the one redeployment of the Honourable Nick Kornoff, who I'm not sure of other committees, but I do know you also sit in science and technology. I'm not sure what your other committee will be. But I would like to thank you as chairperson on behalf of the committee itself. You have been a very active participant, and you have also been one of the members who is always here on time. Punctuality and commitment and discipline are highly regarded characteristics in any organization, particularly Parliament. Thank you very much, Honourable Cornwall. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Now, the news got out earlier than I thought, but the various letters was delivered to the book, and I was drafting an email to you. But may I say publicly, thank you very much for the opportunity to serve here. It was a privilege. I think it's an important committee of Parliament, not always recognized by Parliament as such, and maybe that should change. But my gratitude to all the members and the staff, and especially to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my mail to you, I said that your energy and your hard work is an example for many members of Parliament. And I want to thank you also for the unique way in the way you've chaired this committee.
Thank
it was
you.
Always exciting to come here. You've learned always something, and I leave the Clayton Industry family with a little bit of a sorrow heart, and
yeah.
I want to say thank you for the hard work,
yeah.
Especially done for that.
Thank you once again. Thank you. I just thought it was pertinent because the Honourable Cornwall is leaving at this particular moment. But we have not completed our engagement. I'm sure you realise that. It is just after 20 past. We've got another 15, 20 minutes. So I saw some hands here. Please, is that a hand right down there? And don't want to get it wrong at all. So that is module. Let me just get my own name. Where are these names? If you help me, I'll never learn. Where are these? I'm just looking at all of these pieces of correspondence, none of them from the Chief Whip. The Honourable Mbuyane. Right, I finally got it. You will take the first question or comment. Then we'll go to the Honourable Mantash, Honourable Williams. Did you have your hand up, Honourable McPherson?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, you pardon me, I'm just very new in the department and also new at the same time. But I wanted to verify in terms of the reduction, what informs the reduction and allocation for incentive? When you know that you have a lot of people out there that they need to send back. And I think that is the one question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mantash.
Can I just put a clarification on Olisco or what's like by technology?
Yes. I think if you could just express it again. All right. Now I think it's a valid point there. Yes. Honourable Williams?
Thanks, Chair. my question wasn't answered at all. I'd just like to say that there is no... employment equity is not BEE. Employment equity is about the staff in the company, not the ownership or the control. So again, I'm going to ask the question, is the incentives in any way connected to the government policy of economic transformation, and if not, why not, and what criteria are being used to measure the effectiveness of this? Because it seems to me that the DTI and Treasury are not looking at the transformation policies of government when they're dishing out this billions of rands to fundamentally white-owned controlled businesses, And I'd like to know, why is it that employment equity isn't one of the criteria, in particular compliance to labour legislation? Because it seems that you'll hand out this money to people who create jobs, and that's very good, but at the same time they're not compliant to laws of the country. So I want to know, why not? Why aren't you looking at these issues? Thank you.
I think that's very clear. Now we're going to get a full response. Yes, Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. Out of interest, in Europe, a cow earns $2.60 a day, which is more than 1.2 billion people in the world. And while I don't necessarily agree with the EU's the way in which they do agricultural subsidies, because in some instances it actually hurts the industry, what they are very clear on is that industries that are big job drivers require incentive government support in order to compete with lower cost countries like in Asia and South America. And it seems like we're slowly getting into that mindset. Because the Europeans understand, I actually think that they're probably one of the worst forms of protectionist racket in the world. But they don't care, actually, because they're looking after their market, their interests, and their jobs. But they understand that for every 1 euro that goes into incentives, what comes back into it. And that's why I stress so importantly, the sooner you get that information into the public domain, the quicker that I think MPs, business, government will understand what this does for the economy. So please, I really stress that takes place as soon as possible. I love the idea of a general incentive.
Right.
Because I think that when one starts to, it's important to have sector-defined ones, but you know, there are also ones that, you know, applications that don't fall into those sectors. And I think that agriculture is one sector that is really overlooked in this country. I mean, if the NDP itself says that there's 1 million jobs in agriculture, 1 million, and yet we treat agriculture like it's, you know, it's just some sort of red-headed stepchild, you know, it's just going to look after itself and, you know, just ignore it, and eventually, you know, something will happen. We've got to get involved in that sector as a department. We're doing it through the periphery in agro-process, and next week I'm going to Nampo, and it's still frustrating that the DTI is not there. It's the biggest agricultural show in the Free States, in a little tiny town called Wurtzville. Unbelievable. The biggest agricultural show in the Southern Hemisphere. You have people flying in from all over the world to go and buy machines from South Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going, Lewa?
She wants to.
I'm being serious.
You're quite right.
You know that John Deere sold 12 tractors at 7.5 million rand each in one day. From farmers. And you've got these small businesses in South Africa that are manufacturing their own farming equipment and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the department has no idea what goes on in there. And these guys are just doing their own things without any government support. And that's where, you know, we should be sitting down with, you know, those groups of people and saying, how do we work with you in incentivizing your specific industry? So I hope that the department, Mr. October, you can find some money very quickly. You can quickly take a stand. There, I'm sure it's not too late. And I'm sure that you'll get a lot of traffic there. So I think those sorts of engagements will really help us start focusing our incentives.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Can Treasury and the Department please respond?
Sure.
Let's tackle those outstanding questions
as well.
Yes,
sorry, I didn't explain properly on the last part. So the 2.48 billion, that is the amount that hasn't been dispersed. The application has been approved, but the money hasn't been paid out. So what we meant on that last line is that as the over time, and that amount is declining because those disbursements are being made without further approvals.
Mm-hmm.
So the 2.48 billion is amount is getting smaller over time. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Right.
I'm not sure. The
Honourable Williams gave an extensive breakdown.
Yes, I think maybe for the department to respond on that part, EJ.
Do you want to finish your responses first? The Honourable Mbuyani also?
Well, yeah, I could just get some quick numbers. I mean, in terms of agriculture, it's not TTI's responsibility, but the government gives, the allocation is about agriculture, forestry and fisheries gets about 6 billion a year, rural development gets about 10 billion a year. So there is substantial funding going into agriculture. I think government has made a decision though that most of that funding must go into the transformation of the agricultural sector. We're focusing on land reform, restitution and support to those beneficiaries. So that's really where a lot of the funding is.
But just be very clear.
Yes.
Are you saying then, Mr. Wilcox, that the DTI is not allocating any funds to agro-processing? Because I was under the impression that this was not the case. They did allocate. Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. I was just talking about primary agriculture,
the
growing of stuff on the land.
We should be looking at centers in primary agriculture.
Yeah.
All right, well then I think we'll direct that as a point made here.
Yeah.
To death, you're right.
Correct. That's all I have to say about
that. I'm not sure you felt that the DG should be responding on the other side, is that it?
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Just on Honourable Williams' very direct and very opposite question about the relationship between industrialization and transformation. As you know, we are trying to champion that, and what we did introduce, as you know, in the second or third year of the MSTEP, we did introduce that you must be a certain level 4, so you can't be a completely untransformed business. You must have a level 4. So that is how we link transformation and that. We've also now, across all our incentives, we've now introduced a black empowerment level that you must achieve. And as I said, you're going to ramp that up over the years, where over time you're only going to get an incentive if you're level 1 or 2. But we have to put pressure on companies to transform, because you cannot continue as if you're still living in the Stone Age. You have to sort of understand that you have to do transformation. So we're tying it more and more, but we've already started the process to ensure that we link this. As the Minister said, it must be simultaneous transformation and industrialization. Must go together.
Yes, Mr. Honourable.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and good morning to you and the Honourable Members. If I can perhaps just very briefly touch on the question that Honourable McPherson raised earlier around essentially the bang for our buck, the cost-benefit analysis.
That's right.
Just to mention that on a number of our incentives, we've done very detailed incentive-specific reviews. So SPI, THRIP, EMEA, Business Process Services have all had really detailed reviews where we would do the kinds of calculations that you're looking for. We are coming back to the committee next week, if I recall, and we'll share with you some of the rapid appraisal information that we have. We haven't done the detailed assessment of MSEP yet because, of course, it's a relatively new incentive if you look at the overall time that it takes to get an incentive up and running, and before you actually see some results on the ground. But we will share with you a bit more of the information that DG was referring to. For example, we can tell you that for every 1 rand that we pay out in MSEP, you get about 4 rand in actual private sector investment as a result. So we'll provide a little bit more of that. But as Mr. Wilcox was also indicating, the big incentive review towards the end of the year will give a lot of useful information. Just also to mention that the World Bank study does talk about the benefit of incentives overall, and I think there really has been a step change in the way the World Bank thinks about incentives. So the review that DG was referring to actually talks quite extensively about some of the incentives available for South Africa. I think the critical thing that we may want to consider is, obviously, policy certainty is critical, and sometimes when we talk policy certainty, we think, well, you've got to make sure that there's a commitment to infrastructure, logistics, those kinds of things. But incentives is a critical element of it. So, for example, in the UK, there's now talk about reducing the tax rate in the context of Brexit. So they're trying to mitigate that impact. I think in our case, we need a 10 to 15 year view on where the incentives are going if we expect to see the structural change, the growth of the manufacturing sector. So I think we do need to explore those issues a bit more. And then just a final point is, actually I have spoken at NAMPO as the head of agro-processing at DTI, and in fact one of the interventions that we developed stemming from NAMPO was around the feed sector, where soybean cake was being imported into South Africa from Argentina. We worked quite closely with Astral to set up the Standerton feed mill, which, if I remember correctly, is funded under 12i. Yeah. So we've supported that. That engagement actually came out of NAMPO, so we completely agree it's critical. As you've heard, the DDG will be attending this year as well.
Well, you'll now have to the Boroughs role.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that we came to this point now, because I wanted to raise with Treasury, perhaps before that, let me just put through these two questions which you can respond to when I'm finished speaking. And the one was, how will the DTI be managing the additional allocation in 2018-2019? And the other aspect which you may wish to respond to when you come back next week, Mr. Harnable and DDG Mabichi Thompson, is the one around black incentives, industrialists. You know, how exactly we hear this. I would love one day to see a matrix that I can actually see where the incentives are going. You know, because I can imagine no general would win a war if he didn't know where his troops were. But this is the same thing. I don't know where these incentives really are. You know, I'm trying to latch on to them. I'd like you to do that. Let me add to that this quick question from the Honourable William.
Thanks, Chair. I've just got a question for Treasury. Do you know the total amount of money that this government is spending on incentives, like for all the departments? So I just want that number. Thanks.
So you will respond immediately that I have spoken and have 4 minutes, 5 minutes to do that. But the issue around cost-benefit analysis, I did a little bit of that myself in a budget master's. I can tell you that is just so clinical it isn't true. It's not at all helpful. You need to get and unpack this cost-benefit and bring in what the Honourable William said about empowerment, what the Honourable Mbuyani was mentioning as well. These issues around the equity, exactly the empowerment equity, what does it add up? What is this benefit per se? What are the broader costs, the qualitative costs involved in that issue? And I hope that the study that the Development Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation will undertake will be broader than simply a clinical approach. And you'll see that the World Bank itself is taking this broader view of things and saying, what are the social elements here? What are they? They are critically important now. So when you do that, please take that into account. And the other thing is that we will be going to ask Mr. Hermans to identify a day where we can at least get the deputy minister in that DPME to come along and brief us broadly on some of the work that they are doing, because I believe it does link up with what you are doing, DG and Mr. Wilcox. So if you would respond, perhaps take it first, Mr. Wilcox.
Sure.
You don't have to respond to my one broadly about cost-benefit analysis. That was a comment.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just on the incentives, so in terms of industrial incentives, I think it's 10.2 billion rand over the medium term. I'm happy to provide you with more detail. There are a whole range of incentives.
Sure.
So maybe we can just take it offline and discuss exactly what you require.
There were other questions raised by Honourable Williams. Well, anyone can comment, you know. And my question on the 2018-2019, how are you going to manage that?
Thanks, Chief. Just on the 2018-2019, that allocation, this is the allocation that we will be looking at for the incentive for agro-processing. In part because it's for a limited period, so it allows us to do almost like a pilot program,
okay,
which is sector specific, until we get something that that covers us for a longer period of time,
okay,
where we can then have an extensive set of proposals. And as DG has said, the extensive set of proposals is going to be a generic support across all sectors. We started with agro-processing as one of our sector specifics. We will then also look at what we need to do in the metal fabrication sector as well. So we are marking that, if I may use that term loosely, for the agro-processing incentive.
Well, look, members, I do want to alert you to the fact that we received several documents here this morning, publications. Did you see them?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this one here on the incentive monitoring report, although it's 2015-2016, it will prove very valuable to us, and I assume you'll be doing the 2016-2017 one in due course. I haven't really studied it, obviously, but it's always pertinent to keep in mind that when people are going to be reading a book of this nature, a magazine, a publication, there isn't anything here that could be called superfluous. It is all vitally important. And your layout then becomes critical. I noticed you moved almost to the edge of the page, and that's very difficult to hold. Very difficult indeed,
mm-hmm,
because you're right on the margins, the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you may bear it in mind that it's been proven in a psychological study what your eye span is on a page.
Mm-hmm.
That is one reason why newspapers have columns. So I want to suggest that you, the next one you publish, you have at least a 3 centimeter margin on the left and the right, at least. And position this, that is your eye span. Your eye span is effectively over about 5 centimeters to 6.
Thank you, Chair.
But these are studies we're all aware of, I'm sure. But, right. No, I'm really going to study this because I can see it's got a lot of valuable information, and I'm sure Treasury will find it informative, won't you? And that you're going to be reviewing all their allocations. Good. Mr. Wilcox, I'd like to thank you for being here with us. We hope that you will persuade Treasury, National Treasury, to return in due course when we have other incentives. Yes.
When you look at these books, can we have like less pictures and more information?
Oh, I don't know, but where's my picture? Your picture. Where are our pictures?
No budget for you this year.
No, where are our
pictures? If you remove this picture, you can take the right thing.
Yes. The criteria was looks.
No, thank you very much, and I'd like to thank the DG for taking the time to be here, because he's rushing now to the Select Committee in the National Council of Provinces. Thank you for coming. Thank you, everyone. Meeting adjourned at 10:45. No, Malebo, you see, you've got it. It's useless to do that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, you'll see, we'll improve it.
You know, I did one paper on exactly that.
Oh, okay.
Not that I did the stuff. Okay,
Thank you very much. We'll make sure the next one.
You can consult me free of charge on the layout. Listen, guys. Adrian, Comrade Montage, and
How long does it take to...